genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brains.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Ah, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning out of sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also we're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock, and you can also hear us streaming over the Internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, but before we get to today's theme, I want to remind you to take the poll that is up on my website, brainstormingonline.com. It's a real simple yes-no question. The question is this: are you going to be looking for a new job in 2012? Answer yes or no, and I will announce the results of the poll at the on the show on Thursday. You can also take a look at the interim results just by clicking on the Show the Results button on the poll, and it will show you how people have voted this thus far. I find it very interesting, and the results so far are a little bit astonishing to me, so you may want to go to the website, brainstormingonline.com. That's brainstorming, S-T-O-R-M-I-N, online.com, and you can take the poll for yourself. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is money. Each of my guests will discuss an aspect of money, whether it is making it, keeping it, or conning it. My first guest is chief business correspondent at CNN. He'll share the secret language of money, what you need to know how to speak it, from his latest book, How to Speak Money. My second guest is considered one of today's most visible and innovative money experts. She's put together a plan to help us start dreaming again about our financial futures and our dreams. We'll discuss her upcoming Yes Energy Summit, and that will put us right on the right path for the future. My third guest is the best-selling author of 16 novels. His latest novel, Need You Now, is ripped from the headlines and asks the question, what if the U.S. government knew about the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme, but had a secret agenda? We'll discuss this premise and the financial fraud in general. And as always, if you want to join in our conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Ali Velshi is known as the Hairless Prophet of Doom by Comedy Central's Jon Stewart. Others know him as CNN's chief business correspondent, anchor of CNN's Wake Up Call, and co-host of CNN's weekday morning show, American Morning. Ali was born in Nairobi, Kenya, and he was raised in Toronto, Ontario. He's an Ismaili Muslim of Indian descent. He earned his degree in religious studies from Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, way back in 1994. Ali is married to a New York-born hedge fund manager, and I can only imagine what the dinner conversation is around that house. Ali is also the co-author of How to Speak Money with his CNN colleague, Christine Romans, joining us from New York. Hi, Ali. How are you today?
Very good. Good to be with you.
Well, thank you so much for being our special guest, particularly a thought leader such as yourself. I want to dive right into it. Your book, How to Speak Money.
Yep.
It's a great book. We need more of these books to increase the financial literacy in our country. But I want to challenge you right on the get-go, if I can, please.
Sure.
Because in the first part of the 21st century, there have been two bubbles and two crashes, the dot-com bubble, the real estate bubble. In both cases, people lost trillions of dollars in equity.
Yep.
Now, you come along, you write a book about finance and investing. How fearful are you that the old rules of money no longer apply?
Well, I think that's a very good point. The old rules of money don't apply, which is all the more reason why you need these books. And frankly, I'll take issue with it. I don't think we need more books. We just need everybody to read one or two of them. So my book is just a different approach to try and get people to learn about it. You don't have any margin for error. Not only the old rules not apply, but you know, you saved early. There used to be pensions. The market generally behaved in a predictable fashion, and so you had some margin for error. You don't don't have that anymore. My point is that you could have done and can continue to do well, both in real estate and in markets and in your employment, if you know what the new rules are, if you know what you're supposed to do. So if you buy real estate, if you have money down and you take a very low interest mortgage and you buy in a down market that's going up, you'll do well. If you pick the right stocks as opposed to throwing darts or just buying baskets, you can do well. And in employment, if you prepare to retrain yourself, or you make sure your child is getting the proper training for the next generation of employment, they'll do well. But regular people feel outside of these trends. So business people and rich people always do well in these economies, and regular folks get missed.
Well, and that's a very good point, Ali. Do you think that the baby boomers, those people who really lost those trillions of dollars in the two crashes that we talked about before, are they going to be able to recoup their losses of the past two crashes before they actually come to retirement age?
Well, it's not easy. I don't want to make sort of promises that if you read my book, I'll figure out a way to do it for you. But I will make the promise that if you read the book, you'll behave the way you would behave if you had a toothache. You would ultimately go to the dentist. Or if your car, a warning light went on, or you started hearing some noise, you'd ultimately go to a mechanic. You wouldn't think, if I leave this, it'll just solve itself. The problem with money is it's intimidating. It's particularly intimidating in families. Husbands and wives have difficulty talking about this. Parents and kids have difficulty talking about this. So our job is just to be able to allow you to have the conversation and learn what you need to learn to face your own reality. I'm not promising. I mean, publishers love it when you make book titles that suggest that you're going to become a millionaire and how to get rich quick. I don't have any of those answers, but I do have the answers to what's going on out there and how you can adjust your behavior to try and capitalize from it.
All right, my guest is Ali Velshi, and money is the universal language. I think we can all agree to that
right now.
But as the world's middle class starts to grow and everyone's chasing a piece of the pie, or what we used to call the American dream,
yep,
the language of money, while it is universal, the chase for those higher returns has created new and what I'll call different dialects. For example,
yep,
ETFs. They didn't exist 10 years ago.
Correct.
Hedge funds, while they did exist as far back as the 1960s, really didn't enter the popular vocabulary until 10 years ago. Has the language, the practice of making money become so specialized that one has to learn more and more just to stay in the same place, financially speaking?
Yes. And when you don't know it, so there are two kinds of people who put their money into very fixed, stable investments, like a bank or a CD or a money market. Some people do it because they really are concerned. Conservative. And if they went through a risk tolerance questionnaire, you'd find they're very conservative. These are people who like mini golf as opposed to roller coasters at the amusement park. They're just conservative. But you know what? The overwhelming majority of people with bad performing or underperforming conservative investments, they're not conservative. They just don't get it. And I'm trying to get that bunch of people to realize that, yes, the world of money has become more sophisticated, and you do not have the margin of error to not understand that. And when I say money, when the language of money is so important, I'm talking about when you're having a conversation with your kid about what they're studying at school or whether they're choosing Spanish class versus Mandarin. That could be a life-changing decision for them. That's money. When your kid comes home with a bad mark in a bad grade in math, I don't think you're worried that the kid's not going to become Einstein. You're worried the kid's not going to get into a good school and get a good job. That's a financial matter, because if your kid doesn't do well, you're stuck taking care of them. So you have these are decisions that you have to make, and yes, they're tough, and yes, they're more sophisticated, but we don't have a choice in the matter.
All right, my guest is Ali Velshi. And Ali, you and Christine both agree on one point that you just brought out in that last answer, and that is about continuing education, the importance,
yes,
of a college education. Let's battle that around back and forth just a little bit,
yep,
because you say learn Mandarin or even learn Spanish. Both of those languages are going to carry you into the future better than, say, learning French or German or,
yep,
even Latin or Greek, something like that.
Yep.
But I'll take umbrage with that, because,
yep,
as you become more and more specialized, as you focus more and more on that, we are going to lose certain aspects of our culture on the fringe where we need to have intelligent people who are studying esoteric things. What do you say to that?
Yeah, well, first of all, as you just announced, I'm a religion major, and Christine's an English major, so we're both liberal arts people. And number two, I don't think one is at the to the exclusion of another. But where I say that you should learn Mandarin, Christine says you should learn code because engineering is the best profession. I couldn't be an engineer. I don't actually have much skill with language either. So this isn't a all or nothing, but it is a conversation that a parent needs to have with a kid, because I know people my age who are talking, they're college-bound kids, and they have nothing to say. When the kid says, I'm going to study this and I want to go to this school, kids are choosing schools for absolutely the wrong reason. We remain one of the few cultures in the world where you spend an extra $25,000 at school for a year to find yourself, where the Indians are trying to get us through school in 3 years so that they can get out to the workforce faster. We need a different kind of conversation. If your kid wants to be a poet or a hairdresser or whatever they want to be, that's fantastic if they're going to be a really good one. And frankly, if you're a hairdresser, maybe you should learn Mandarin because there are going to be more Chinese people needing haircuts. But my point is just these should all be informed decisions. We need to stop thinking about education as this thing you do to liberate yourself and find yourself and grow up. That's not what it's for. It's to prepare yourself for a working life.
All right. We're learning how to speak money with my guest, Ali Velshi. Ali, you talked earlier in an earlier answer about really knowing yourself, knowing your risk tolerance and everything else. Let's talk about knowing yourself. How does knowing your own abilities and limitations when it comes to investing factor into your understanding of how you make money?
Well, you're knowing your there's two things you need to know. One is people don't know what their money's for. They know they're supposed to save money. They know it's supposed to go into a 401k or something like that. But they have this nebulous view of retirement. And one thing we write about is know what that means. Is retirement a villa in Tuscany? Is it golf? Is it travel? Is it living close to your family? What is it? Because every time you save for a particular thing, you do better at saving for it. If you're saving for a particular car or a particular piece of clothing or a TV, you're much more effective than if you're just generally gathering money. Number two, if you are not effective at understanding the sophisticated nature of money, go and get help. There's lots of help on the internet, in books like this, on the website that I write for, money.com. There are TV shows. The problem with money is it is the one thing we just store away when we don't understand it. We're passive-aggressive about money. We just want people to feel as comfortable talking about money as they talk about what they're making for dinner tonight. That's all we really are talking about, the language of it. We find the greatest difficulty in relationships is people not understanding what they don't know. It's okay to not know about money. It's not okay to not know that you don't know about it. It's not okay to not talk about it.
All right. Well, speaking of relationships, Ali, how do gender roles play in people's perception of money? Because certainly there are differences between my wife and I, how we view money and actually how we use money.
Sure.
Is that generic across all families across the United States?
The differences are generic. It's not always the man or the woman who has the same role in a relationship. There are many men who are more conservative about money than women. You know, that's an old stereotype, right? Men make the money, women spend the money. That is largely turned on its head these days. Women are generally more conservative both with spending and with investing money. Goes down to the idea that guys don't really like to ask for directions. Women are entirely happy asking for directions. So what tends to happen, there's an analogy we use in the book. There was a study done of pilots, and they found with women pilots, they generally had to bring their level of confidence in flying up to meet their abilities. With men pilots, you had to bring their abilities up to match their confidence because men are born thinking that they know how to fly planes.
Very true. But let's take that whole concept about gender and let's talk about geography. Are there different perceptions in Asia versus Europe versus the United States and Canada about how we view money?
Well, I think there are some very key differences. In the United States, because of the interest rate deduction on mortgages, there has been this cultural emphasis on buying a house as part of the American dream. In Canada, you get no reward for buying a house other than your home ownership. In fact, to some degree, it's penalized. It's made more difficult than it is in many places. And yet, the home ownership rates in Canada are higher than they are in the United States. So the United States subsidizes home ownership, pushes people into this idea of debt that they sometimes can't handle to no good end. In Canada, the freedom to invest in a registered retirement savings plan, an RRSP, is much greater. In the United States, you only can invest in what your company offers, which might be 10 or 12 mutual funds. In Canada, you can invest in anything in the entire investing universe. So people tend to be better investors in their retirement in Canada and more frugal about their house. You'll meet more people who rent for an entire lifetime in Canada. In the United States, there's this drive to own a house and far less emphasis on saving for retirement.
All right. We're learning how to speak money with my guest, Ali Velshi. Ali, in this economy that we find ourselves in right now, what are some of your top ideas for prospering in, say, the next 10 years?
I would say there are three areas that you have to look at. The first one is property. Don't buy a house if you don't need one, but if you can afford one and you don't need the flexibility of being able to move, you will not find, generally speaking, lower interest rates than we've got today and probably for the next couple of years. Combined with low prices, it is probably one of the best times ever to buy property, but don't do that if you can't afford it. Number two, prepare yourself and your kids for the jobs of the future. Find out if you're a manufacturing worker, understand that there isn't a lot of light at the end of that tunnel. So is it worth retraining in your 40s, maybe even 50, into becoming a healthcare worker or something where it's really, really growing? And in terms of investments, you know, China, India, these places are still growing gangbusters. So we need to think about how we make money in those places. And you can buy North American multinational corporations that sell all their products there, and that's one way to expose yourself to it. Or you buy ETFs, exchange-traded funds, that focus on those areas. Or you look at actively managed mutual funds run by mutual fund managers who spend their time in India or China and can distinguish between companies. But the point is there's lots of opportunity for growth and good investment. So, you know, we shouldn't get too caught up in the headlines about tough years and markets and recessions in Europe and slow growth in North America. The reality is there are lots of investment opportunities out there.
Well, and the reality is, Ali, last year was the best. The United States market was the best market in the world, if you took a look at it, with the exception of some really small outlying markets. My guest is Ali Velshi. We're talking about his book, How to Speak Money, that he co-wrote with Christine Romans. Ali, what do you want people to take away from reading your book, How to Speak Money?
You know, I often people ask me who I wrote the book for, and I often say Martians. You need no prerequisite to read that book. It is easy. It's modular. You don't have to start at the beginning. You don't have to start at the end. Give it to somebody. If you fight with your husband or your wife about money, just give them the book. It will make people, the lesson it gives you, and I've learned this about Christine, is that 10 years of working together, we do the same stuff. We don't see money the same way. When the Dow's down 500 points, I want her to do my TV hits so I can find stocks to buy. She worries about her kids' education. You know, two people with the same types of education, the same types of experience, same socioeconomic position, we see money differently, and I accept that that's okay. So your husband and your wife need to accept that it's okay that you speak money a little bit differently.
Oh, that is good. My guest has been Ali Velshi, author of the book, How to Speak Money, The Language and the Knowledge You Need Now. Ali, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
I'd go to alivelshi.com. That's my website that has a lot of information on it, and it links to everything I do on CNN, all of my pages, different things I do. The one thing you should know about me and Christine is that we cater to everybody. We understand that our audience has very, very different levels of sophistication about money, and no matter whether it's personal finance you want to know about or international trends, we cover all of that. We think everybody, the world's a better place if everybody understands money.
That is true. A little knowledge does go a long way. My guest has been Ali Velshi. Ali, thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
My pleasure.
Take care.